Welcome to episode 16 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, we discuss lists and how both the proper and improper use of lists can impact the experience of assistive technology users on the web. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/016. And now, on to the show.
Hey, y'all. I am excited to be here talking about lists today. I'm Amber Hines, and I have with me Steve.
Hello, everybody.
And Chris.
Howdy.
And I don't know why I did not give you guys last names, even though I gave myself one.
Do you want to try again?
No. I think this is just the fun of not having a script.
Yeah. So I just want to acknowledge that the Texans here greeted you with a y'all and a howdy.
Yes.
And the Midwestern guy here just said, hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, we are going to be talking about lists, but first we're going to have some liquid death.
Liquid death.
Liquid death. Steve, we need to separately engineer like a heavy metal electric guitar drop that I can slot in right there.
Yeah, totally.
We'll take care of that in post.
Yep.
We will say, for people who haven't listened all the way to the end, and shame on you for not listening all the way to the end. But if you didn't, you might not know that Steve actually makes all of our music. It's not stock music that you're hearing on this podcast.
Completely original.
Just like us.
Would you expect anything less?
So Chris, tell everyone about Liquid Death.
This is either going to be a very short podcast episode that never gets aired, or we'll all be okay. We'll see. We're going to post this in the show notes, but there's a great video about this company on CNBC's Make It, and it's available openly on YouTube. This was started by a guy, I'm paraphrasing the video here. This was started by a guy who was in brand marketing and brand design for a number of years. And he kind of was trying to figure out like a product company, a CPG company on the side, and he eventually launched Liquid Death. And I think it just started as canned water.
Well, you forgot the backstory of he's a guitarist and he's into like heavy metal and stuff. And he would go to heavy metal concerts, and a lot of times they were sponsored by Monster energy drinks. But he found out that the band people weren't actually drinking Monster energy drinks. They were like drinking out of the cans that they had dumped and put water in. There's a hole in the market.
The other thing too is like, you know, it's like you see that on a store shelf, something called Liquid Death, and you're immediately going to pick it up. That was the other thing that he talked about in the CNBC Make It video, is like coming up with a brand and packaging that people like, it grabs their attention, yanks them over to the shelf, and then they have to pick it up and look at it. And I think the way he put it was, if you can get someone to pick something up, you know, you've pretty much won the battle at that point.
If you're not familiar with this brand, go watch the marketing for their tea, but maybe don't do it at work or in front of your children. It is.
Well, can I read the can here? It says.
Yeah. Read the can.
It says Liquid Death, rest in peach, murder your thirst. And then I like this little, it's real small text right above the nutrition facts. It says, this psychotic can of iced tea will use agave and B vitamins to savagely murder your thirst and turn its insides into balloon animals to book gigs at children's birthday parties.
Yeah. Paints a picture.
Well, even like in the area, you know how usually there's like messages that tell you to recycle your cans or bottles? This one says recycle or die instead of just recycle. right? Yeah. They definitely have the branding down. You can tell he worked at an ad agency. A big one. Mm-hmm. He, in that interview, he talks about how he did campaigns for, like, what is it? Hidden Valley Organic Milk. And some other, like, really big national brands. So, obviously, he, you know, has experience on branding. But this is a new thing. Like, he only really hit the store shelves in 2020, like, in COVID. And I think the company is already valued at over $700 million.
What?
Because just the way he's done branding. And he actually, I thought that was interesting. And then we got to open it and try it. He did, which is, I think, super cool for anyone who's starting any company, or especially a product company where you have to invest in the product. In that video, I don't know, maybe you didn't watch it, but he talks about how he had this idea, but he wanted to test it first before he invested a bunch in actually creating it. So he made like a 3D mock-up of a can, and he spent $1,500 making a video, like a commercial, even though he had no product. And then he put it on YouTube and spent a little bit of money like promoting it. And then it took off, and they had like hundreds of thousands of people being like, where can I buy this? And like 7-Eleven contacted him, was like, we want to get this in our stores. He didn't even have a product. But then he used that traction to go out and get investors, and he got $150,000 just in his first investor based off of how people were reacting on YouTube. And that's how he funded creating his, or like creating his first round of canned water.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I was like, wow, this guy's smart.
Well, that's a good segue to do our big announcement, right? The Equalized Digital flavored water, right?
Yes, everyone.
It'll be murder bad accessibility.
Yeah, there you go. Should we crack these open and try Liquid Death?
Yeah. Let's do it. So this is iced tea. It is not alcoholic. It is caffeinated. I know we had a non-caffeinated beverage on a podcast recently, and you guys were kind of down on that.
Yeah. So here we go.
All right. Liquid Death going in.
All right. It's peachy.
Yeah, I get the peach flavor. I don't really get the tea as much, though.
No.
Yeah.
It tastes like a peach drink.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a little nervous. I don't typically like cold teas, right? Like hot tea, but I don't typically like...
I love cold tea. Like, I'll just, like, at a restaurant, like, unsweetened, unflavored iced tea, like, not even lemon, just, like, cold black tea. I like that.
That sounds disgusting. This is not bad, though. I mean, it's, like, it's like, watery, right? Like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not a juice.
It's peach forward. It's light on the tea. I get maybe a tiny bit of tea in the aftertaste. I definitely taste like the vitamins. There's an undertone of vitamins there. Like if you've had like a vitamin water or something like that, maybe that's why they made the peach so strong. Maybe the vitamin flavor was overpowering the tea flavor. Mm. I can only imagine the meetings as they were creating the formula, right?
It's not bad though.
I also like that it's kind of like off sweet. Like, it's not insanely sweet.
It's not Hello Kitty cherry pop.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I mean, I like that. It's like, it seems a little dry to me. And I kind of like that because, you know, we've talked about this. I drink a lot of Diet Coke, which is super dry. So it's not bad.
Yeah. And people watching what they're drinking, this whole can, and it's a 19.2 fluid ounce can. Which
that is really tall. It's like double the size.
I'm gonna have to look that up if that's like their own thing, and it's part of them being irreverent as they aren't conforming to beverage norms by having a, you know, either a 12 or a 16 ounce can. It has to be 19.2. I don't know, but 30 calories in this whole can, and the ingredients are water, agave nectar, black tea, citric acid, natural peach, pear, and apricot flavor, and vitamin B6 and vitamin B12. So in terms of ingredient list, pretty solid and straightforward and something you can kind of feel good about drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of their points. Like, they're trying to create an alternative, but they want it to be an alternative that still looks cool.
Yeah.
So like a burly heavy metal biker dude can walk around with a can of peach tea and nobody will be like, why are you drinking Snapple, man? Like a grandma. So I will say, like, their ads are pretty entertaining, although a little on the edgy side for me. but yeah, that was kind of like when they introduced the tea. So, you know, if you're into kind of like edgy, slightly inappropriate humor, you will probably enjoy their ads on their YouTube channel or just on their website.
It's kind of a weird, like, juxtaposition, right, between the marketing and the branding and the drink, right? The drink is Liquid Life, right? Like, it's not Liquid Death because it's actually pretty good for you for the most part, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They're definitely taking the irony to the nth degree with this one. Like, you'd expect like Monster Energy to have this kind of marketing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what in the interview with him, he was talking about how you have to, from a marketing perspective, and, you know, I don't know, maybe we can come up with like, how do we do this and tie it to accessibility? Maybe we can't, but he was saying that what he's found is that to really get people engaged or just like think out of the box, you have to do things like you have to ask yourself, what is the dumbest idea I could possibly come up with? Because our natural inclination in marketing is to just go with what works. Like, other companies have done this and it works. And so as a result, you just kind of are like mainstream and you're not unique. Yeah. And so he said, like, that's the thing with the Liquid Death. Like, they were sitting around talking about how they were going to make canned water. It needed to appeal to the sort of demographic he was targeting. And they're like, what would be the dumbest thing that you could call like a super healthy beverage?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's how they came up with the Liquid Death name, because of course, like, it doesn't make any sense, right? It's like the right. total opposite. But I think, you know, that's interesting to think about, like, even, you know, trying to force a connection to accessibility or not, right? But like, we talk about that a lot. Like, how do we get people interested in accessibility, people interested in caring? I mean, I had someone comment on a post once, and I'm not going to call them out or even say where it was, but this happened this week, and it was frustrating for me, where someone just said, well, okay, fine, maybe if the website is made for people who are blind and that's who visits that website, then that what you said is a good idea. And I was just like, no, I mean, why are we saying that we have to have websites for blind people and other websites? Well, they're not really for blind people, so we're not going to make right. them work. So I'm like trying to figure out, like, what is that really absurd thing that would call to action and make people connect with the brand in a way that makes them really want to, like, be interested in something they wouldn't normally buy or they wouldn't normally do? I don't know if I have.
I don't know if I'm clever enough to come up with irreverent, accessible messaging.
yeah, the thing that's hard is you don't.
Of Liquid Death.
I don't have the innate desire to be offensive to people.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like if you go watch his videos, like, there's stuff on there that I was like, yeah, it's kind of offensive. Like, they had an ad. Well, I think their ad that went viral, it showed someone being waterboarded with their water. Right.
Oh, man.
Which is a little on the edgy side of advertising. Like, yeah. Is that really funny? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
But, yeah, so, like, that probably doesn't come naturally to me, but maybe there's someone out there who's going to figure it out, and they're going to have really awesome, like, interesting ad campaigns, and everybody's going to get into accessibility because of it. I don't know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Probably, well, it won't be abled people.
That's right.
It'll be someone who identifies as having that disability, and then it's safer for them to do whatever they want to say, whatever they want to say about it.
Right.
So I suggested that we should talk about lists today because we had kind of a couple episodes ago, we had kind of ended with a little footnote about lists. And just to summarize, it's at the bottom of our or at the end of our tables episode. If you didn't hear that one, we were talking about how a lot of times we don't realize that having content in lists can be really helpful for screen reader users, just like using the HTML list rather than divs to group related things. And because when a screen reader encounters that, it's going to say list 12 items or something like that. And so the get context is for the number of things in the group that are coming. And then they also have the ability, if they want to, just skip all the way to the end. Whereas if you just had those things in a div, they wouldn't know how many there were. They wouldn't really be able to just be like, okay, I want to go beyond this into the next thing. Right. So that's why lists are useful. And I thought maybe we could go more in depth on lists today.
Yeah.
So
in looking into this a little bit and kind of brushing up on my own knowledge, and for anyone that's maybe just dropping in on this episode and doesn't know who we are, well, first of all, go back and listen to some earlier episodes. Second, I'm more on the sales side of this, and so I don't do a lot of audits. I don't do a lot of development. I'm only limitedly involved in projects, so I'm probably the lowest level accessibility expert on our team. So I was looking at this, and I'm going to note it for our show notes, but I found a pretty great video on YouTube that was eye-opening for me, that was put out by a local community college, actually, where a gentleman was going through various types of both ordered and unordered lists, and lists that were built with semantic HTML and without, and like how the screen reader reads them all very differently. And what struck me is just how different it really can be when that tool is reading it back, even though to all of us who are looking at this visually, they all look virtually identical. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can start there, and we can start with like the code and what to do and what not to do. Because that's really what struck me, is like it does go down to the code level with this stuff.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker. Accessibility Checker is the best plugin for accessibility testing WordPress websites. Use it to find accessibility problems during new builds or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis. In honor of Global Accessibility Awareness Day, we are offering all of our podcast listeners 30% off all paid Accessibility Checker plans. From May 18th to May 24th, 2023, visit equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker and use coupon code GAD23. That's GAAD23 at checkout to save 30% off all paid plans. Don't miss out on this limited time sale. Get Accessibility Checker today. Yeah. So there's typically two types of list, right? We have ordered list and unordered list, just to kind of give a little bit of a basic background on some of the HTML markup for lists. I think it's super important, like Chris said, to use those correctly, because like to a sighted user, right, the only indication that somebody's using an ordered list over an unordered list is probably the number. And there's actually ways for a developer to go around hiding that number if they really wanted to, right? So
an a ordered list would output like 1, 2, 3, 4 before each thing, and an unordered list would have bullet points of some sort.
Right. And of course, those numbers or that bullets can be hidden as well, you know, so that can add some confusion. But typically, you want those numbers to show. The bullets, you know, that can, you know, visually, it's a nice indicator if there's bullets there. But I don't know if it's 100% necessary, because we're going to talk about that later on, that list can be used in other and other aspects to help help give context to what the screen reader is reading out. But so an unordered list is typically just a collection, right? Any type of collection, any kind of content that can be collected into a list, like features or whatnot. And they don't really have any like natural hierarchy or anything. And then there's the ordered list. So these are typically things that are sequenced, that happen in a certain sequence, like a recipe, right? Or or a lesson where there's steps to complete something. So yeah, it's a little quick overview on the basics of lists.
Yeah, and the HTML behind that is pretty simple. You've got a container element that's just either a UL for unordered or an OL for ordered, that tag. And then regardless of what the parent is, it's just an LI tag inside there for those of us new to HTML. But I think, yeah, maybe can we just like name out all of the things that we've seen on websites where people frequently don't, like, I think it's really obvious, your example of recipe. Everybody would think, okay, the ingredients list, that's an unordered list, or like what's needed in the ingredients, because it doesn't really matter, that's bulleted. And then the steps, the instructions, is an ordered list. Like, that's really obvious that this should be a list. But I think it might be interesting to like name out some things we can think of that people don't commonly put in lists, or developers don't commonly put in lists, but where they could be. So does anybody have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think you mentioned at the beginning of the episode a little bit, right? Like a post grid, right? A grid of posts, where that, you know, once a screen reader reaches that, it calls out that it's a list and it tells you the number, and then they can navigate to. Can the screen reader navigate to any part, like any specific number in that list?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they could use keyboard shortcuts to just go to like the next list item. Yeah. But if they open like the rotor, which might be called something different in different screen readers, but in VoiceOver or NVDA, you have the ability to go in and see like they could just see what are all the list items. Then they could just jump to like the fourth one. I have a hard time imagining a user doing that unless they've been there and they really knew the list, because it's like, why would you randomly pick the fourth? Do you know what I mean? But it is possible. I think it's more likely, like more beneficial because of telling the number or being able to be like, oh, I want to skip this list completely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in our development process, I think this is a newer kind of revelation for us, right? That to use lists in this fashion. Because I think before we would do things like like if it was like a page that would refresh and, you know, you got your pagination. So I'm trying to describe like a typical like blog archive, right? And say there's 9 posts on that page, you know, 3 columns. And we've gone in before and we've updated the page title to read out how many, you know, like page 1 and there's 9 posts. Right. And then when you page to the next one, we update the title so that when the page refreshes, the screen or reads out how many are in the title. But this kind of, you know, that can be a lot of extra work to like modify the output of the title. And, you know, you got to take into consideration any kind of SEO plugin you have installed that may be hooking into that as well. So I think this is it's a more elegant and simple solution from a development standpoint to give that context to the screen reader of that this is a group of posts and how many there are.
Yeah, and I think really,
I mean, it's almost like anytime you have a grouping of like things, right, whether it's ordered or unordered. And so another one that immediately jumps to mind is like a team page, if you have a good number of team members.
Well, yeah, I mean, even if you just had 3, our team page has more than us, but if it was just the 3 of us, it'd still be beneficial. Like a lot of times I see this where it's just divs that have been organized into columns. And then in each one, there's like a picture and a heading and maybe a little bio or just like a name and a job title or whatever. But like having that in the list where the underlying HTML is an unordered list, but, or maybe it could be ordered and I'm number 1. I don't know. but like having that in the list, even if it's only a few people. So yeah, like a team grid, especially if you have a big team. If you have 50 people, like that might, at a glance, a sighted person can open that page and be like, oh, there's 50, or there's, they probably wouldn't know 50, right? That's a big number to recognize instantly. But you'd be like, wow, this is a big team. But Mm-hmm. If you didn't have it in a list, then a blind person wouldn't have that instant, oh, there's 50 people on here. Whereas if you have it in a list and they're like, you know, list 50 items, mm-hmm. item one of 50, right? Like they're going to be like, oh, this is a big team at this company. Really any groups of posts. So that would be like products on a product. And also not just on the archive, but also like if you have a related product section yeah. or related post section that just like events? Has like three. Yeah, right. Events.
Mm-hmm. Events, yeah.
Yeah. Another thing outside of post groups is like related links. So like social media icons mm-hmm. that link out to your social media site. Sometimes I just see them where it's just like an image with a space and then an image with a space, right? With links around them. It would be yeah. nicer if that was wrapped in a list so they know how many social media icons to expect, or they could quickly skip past it instead of having to go through each one.
Yeah. Or like the credit card symbols where like sometimes you see them, like there's four credit card symbols and they're all in one image.
Like, oh yeah.
It's combined into one image where, you know, if you take the extra step to just break those out into, you know, separate images and then put them in a list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One image might be okay if you have good alt text, but I think probably like having it in a list would be better.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was going to be my next call out is make sure you listen to the previous episode right before this one, but got to have alt text on those. Regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. Not generated by AI.
Yeah. Probably not. At least not right now.
Not right now. We'll yeah. get there.
Yeah. Can we think of any other things that should be in
I mean, there's all kinds of things, right? Like steps, any kind of steps that happen. A timeline? What do you feel about a timeline?
Oh, yeah. I think a timeline would be if you're thinking like dates, like some like the history of your company or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I could see that being list. That might actually, depending on how you're doing it, be a nested list where you have like a unordered list and each item in that is just like a year maybe. And then inside those LI elements, you can put another unordered list, right? Like we're thinking outline format. And then those are like, you know, January, this happened. March, this happened. So that would probably be a nested list would be the most ideal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I think something that is interesting, and you mentioned this a little bit, that you can hide like the bullets or the numbers, but it might be worth kind of talking about the basics of what that means. Because I think some people might hear us saying, oh, your related posts have to be in a list, or your credit card symbols have to be in a list, your social media icons. And they're thinking, well, I don't want them one on top of another and a bullet point to the left.
Right.
Sorry, Chris.
It's okay.
So, you know, I'd be curious, Steve, can you talk a little bit about like how hard is it to actually style lists in the same way that you might style a div if you're a developer who's used to just always building these things with divs?
Yeah, I mean, it presents a little bit of a challenge, right? Because a div, we don't typically put a global style on a div, right? I mean, you can, but, you know, in our style sheets, we don't typically, you know, do div and then add styles that are for all divs, right? Because that would create all kinds of havoc. But we do define global styles for lists, right? So we typically will do our, you know, UL and our OL, and, you know, we're putting some basic padding or some basic margin on the bottom, and sometimes we'll have like a left margin or padding inset on the list to make it sit set in from the rest of the paragraph text to make it a little more visually readable. And then in that we the LI element where sometimes put some default global styles on. So it's important to, I think, in your dev process to do that first, right? To define your global styles first, to make sure you have that, you know, all defined. Then when you go to do things like your blog archive or your related post or, you know, timeline or events, whatever we just talked about, when you first define that markup, right, it's gonna have a bullet point on it, right, or it's gonna have a number on it, depending what it
is,
right?
An underline or something sometimes, right. People do, yeah.
So you're gonna want to either, you know, unset those styles, you know, you target that element specifically, and you either want to unset those styles or you want to override the styles that you have set globally. But I think once you get in a flow, once you know what your global styles are and you know what you have to do to reset, you could even define a mixin, right? A SAS mixin that does like a list reset for you, right? And you just include that in each of your elements that are using list, and it resets it, right? And removes the bullet, removes the padding and the margin, so that it's kind of acts more as a standard div at that point. But yeah, I think it's more work than just using divs, and you have to anticipate that, and you have to be ready. And I know, like, sometimes a client will request a change after the fact, right? Heaven forbid client requests changes, they always do, and they want like a global change to say the list, and you got to make this global change, and it may require you to go back to those other elements and make some updates to an override or to the mixin if you're using a mixin to do a reset.
So when you're coding stuff in this way, like, and you have some of these things where it's you know, not the global, what we would call a typical list style, where there's a number or a bullet point, so it's like a blog archive, or it's the credit card images, or any of the other examples we talked about. When a screen reader is reading those back, if we're not rendering a number or a bullet point, it's not still saying number or bullet, right? When it's reading things back, it just reads whatever's presented in the HTML.
Yeah. I don't think the display of that number, or like if you do like list style none on a list, which I think that's correct, will remove the bullet point. I don't think that has any bearing on the screen reader. It'll still read it out as a normal list.
Okay. Well, and on, like, this is, you know, worth noting, right? When they encounter an unordered list, it still says one of whatever, two of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
As they move through the elements, it's not, like, even though it's unordered and they aren't numbered, it does say that. And I don't remember right at this moment if it sounds different on an ordered list, because, to be honest, I see ordered lists so infrequently on the things that we're auditing or making.
Yeah.
Is
that because, are you seeing it when it should be used?
I think so. I don't remember ever flagging in an audit something that was supposed to be an ordered list and wasn't. So I think if it was, I think it's just there's fewer applications for true ordered lists where we're saying this has to be first. Like, we haven't ever audited a food blogger website.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, like, maybe like instructions, like if you have you've written documentation. But even ours, I'm trying to think. I guess we have some ordered lists in our documentation for our accessibility checker plugin. But I don't know if I listened to them with the screen reader. Yeah. So maybe I should go do that and see if it's different.
Well, but, I mean, we have like an index of like, right? We have like a list of links, right, in our documentation, like groups.
Yeah, but those are all in an unordered list because
the order doesn't matter.
The order doesn't matter when we're like linking out to titles. I think it's only some of them within it, like maybe the quick start guide that I'm going to rewrite at some point in time because it's not as quick start as I would like it to be. That I think has, like, you know, go to your settings page and choose which posts you want to scan before go run a full site scan in Pro, right? Like, so that has an order that matters. And so I think that might have an actual ordered list in it. But I feel like most of the time in content on websites, I'm seeing unordered lists more than anything else.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about anything we can think of where maybe we saw a list being used, but it shouldn't have been in a list?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've had a recent project where that came up. Have to refresh my memory on what that was, but I mean, I've seen some weird stuff, like just huge blocks of text being used inside of a list, right? I mean, if it's a like a paragraph text, you might want to rethink if that really should be in a list, or if it should be, you know, a paragraph with a title, right?
Yeah, like I've seen before where, because you can have, which maybe we'll circle back on, you can have different tags inside a list, but I've seen where in the, like those blog posts where they're like top 10 things, right? Top 10 XYZ that they write for SEO. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they want to put one as that, and then whatever the name is in the heading, and then they have a bunch of paragraphs, maybe even images, and they're putting those all in a list. And at that point, I don't actually think like that really needs to be like an ordered list or even a bolded list. Like, I think you would just want, instead of trying to force it into a list to make it automatically give the 1, 2, 3, 4 to your headings, I think you mm-hmm. would just type it in the heading. Because yeah, I think that's yeah. more of a decorative, calling it number 1 or number 10, than a really trying to communicate this as a list.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's always the case of, you know, it just being used improperly, right? It's not an ordered list. These things really aren't related, you know, things like that.
Yeah. I think I have seen a few. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I think I've seen I've seen on sites where people have used like a list as a table, which I think, you know, was a really bad example of using a list. I mean, you have the area spec that I think you could add to a list to kind of like somehow make it a table, but I don't know if like the area spec would override the fact that it's a table element. Like that'd be a good test to like try to use the area spec to make a table out of a list and see what the screen reader says. Right.
The screen reader would be like, just use a table. Yeah. Go listen to Accessibility Craft episode, whatever it was. Right. Maybe Chris yeah. knows the number.
Contact Equalize Digital for help.
Yeah. Best rule of ARIA is do not use ARIA.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, okay. So let's talk about what HTML tags are not allowed in a list. Because we talked about posts and how you should do groups of posts, which means you're probably going to have an image tag in there. You might have heading tags. You might have a paragraph tag if you have a little excerpt, and then like another A tag with a link. Could you put a table in a list? Like, could we have, is that allowed?
Mm.
Do we know? Are there any things that can't go in LI elements?
So according to the spec, right, LI element can contain any element that is valid in the body. So these, I'll put a link in the show notes here to the spec as well. But it says the LI may contain flow content, which is a collection of all block and inline elements. So I think anything that you can use within the body, you can use within an LI.
So I could be like, here's a list of 3 tables that show something, and I could put each table in its own LI element.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there has to be some regard for how much content you're putting in a list, right? At some point, it's just too much content in to be a list, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. Like, yeah. it doesn't make sense. Or people will lose context. Like, if it was a really big table and then get to the end of it and it's like, it tells you, okay, we're out of the table. Now we're back in the list. They might be like, wait a minute, I was in a list.
yeah. You lose kind of context. Yeah,
I mean, at that point, wouldn't you just maybe use headings?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. And if you're unsure, you could always use the w3.org validator, right? You can, I'll put a link to this in the show notes as well, but you can just go to that website, put your page URL in, and it'll validate all your HTML markup for you.
Yeah, so just about anything can be in an LI, but this is something we flagged on audits, is you cannot have anything other than LI elements inside a OL or UL tag. So yeah, you can't have correct. Like OL
title
and then a heading and then all your LIs. Like, if you want a heading for your list, it has to be outside of the OL before it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's tighter rules about that.
Right. So that's a little bit of a segue to some of the ARIA labels that can help in that regard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we were talking about this. I found this sort of interesting article on scottohara.me. I haven't heard of him before, but it's kind of fun when I come across people who've like written stuff about accessibility when I'm doing research and I find new blogs. He has a post where he was experimenting with, and it's actually a couple years old, but it looks like he updated it last month with using some labels, like ARIA labels or ARIA labeled by on list tags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. I think sort of the summary of it is, and this is a neat post because he's got the HTML, he's got a code pen here that sort of shows different things he's doing. And he sort of says, naming list item seems like a dubious practice, but it may have legitimate use cases, like the actual LI items. He's like, I don't know about this, is how he summarizes it. But the OL or the UL tag,
mm-hmm.
it might be helpful to label with ARIA.
So you can use the ARIA labeled by on a LI, not just on the UL?
Yeah, it works.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I think that if you put an ARIA label on it, it overrides whatever is inside it. Because that would be the behavior like with a link, right?
So it wouldn't say bullet or
well, it doesn't X say bullet anyway. Or... It doesn't say bullet anyway, but
list.
An example of this is, let's say we had social media icons where we're not linking them anywhere, but we just want to show people what social media we're on. So we have a list of social media icons. You could have alt text on that image, or I think what would work is that on the LI element that is containing the image, you could put ARIA-label, Facebook, Mastodon, whatever, and then it wouldn't read out the image inside it. I think when it gets to that LI, it would just read the ARIA label is what he was saying.
Oh, so it just wholesale replaces.
Yeah.
That's generally the way it works. Like on an A tag, that's how it works.
If you put the ARIA label on the UL, right? Instead of the screen reader saying group or list, what's it say?
It'll say group instead.
It'll say group instead, but does it say group and then your label?
I think so. I don't know. I feel like we're maybe going to leave this podcast episode with a little bit of homework. And anyone listening, you know, feel free to message us on Twitter or I'm on Mastodon these days and let us know because we're always interested in that.
Yeah, well, you can fact check us on all this.
Fake news, guys.
No, I mean, accessibility is a journey. There's always more to know.
Yeah. So I had a little bit of a, you know, kind of a question. We talked about like using the lists like on a blog archive, right. To kind of give more context. I know like we just stated, you know, the best ARIA to use is no ARIA. Right. But if you don't want to go through the effort to create that into a list and then have potential styling conflicts with your global styles, can you use just roll list and roll list item, like, and the screen reader would read it out just fine, like as if it is a list? I mean, I think that might be a more simplified solution.
So that's definitely, I think, something that we recommend, like if you don't want to have to rebuild everything. And there's a legitimate reason not to rebuild all of your stuff. Like maybe you have a ton of CSS already defined on these and a lot of styles. Then, you could add role equals list on the parent item and then role equals list item, all one word, on the the child divs that are supposed to be like the LIs, and that would make it read it like a list.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, that would work as a way to remediate if you need to remediate. I wouldn't code that way from the beginning.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, something when I was looking into this that I was less familiar with is description lists. There's on the Web Accessibility Initiative W3C website, which we can link in. Have you ever used these, Steve? There, it's the parent is a DL tag, and then the child is, well, you can have a DT, which is like a title. And then under that, a DD. So this is a way to, a description list consists of one or more term and description groupings. So in the example on this, they have authors as the DT. Mm-hmm. And then the DD under it would be John, and then another DD of Luke. And then they have a DT for editor, and then a DD under that is Frank.
Yeah, I've seen this, and in some research for this podcast, I came across this as well as a less commonly used list item. I don't know that I would like do this by default. I'd probably just make a nested list, right? Because that's essentially what this is. So this is like a shorthand for a nested list, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a block like this doesn't exist in WordPress core. So if you were going to do this, it'd be something you'd do in the theme or creating your own block.
Custom block, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was interesting because it's something I hadn't really seen before. And I'm just not really sure. It almost seems like it's defining too, because I saw one where they had like multiple terms in their second example. Like they're talking about if you wanted to define the word color, but they want to provide two terms like the American spelling and the British spelling.
Mm-hmm. Glossaries or dictionaries. You know, I could see it. Yeah.
That's maybe where it makes more sense than like, it feels odd to me with just like the authors and the editors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would like specifications for a complex product in an e-commerce store be an application for something like this? Like if you have different configurations and colors and options, like, and
well, like small comes in these colors and medium comes in these colors and large comes
like that. Yeah. Like but again, it's like, why not just use a nested list, I guess?
It's the markups, it's less markup, right? It's a little bit less markup. You know, it's not you know, it's not going to be nested as deeply as like a nested list would.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you don't have to define the second UL, right? So, can you put as many like? Okay, so just answer this. So, like, you have your DL, and then you have your DT, and you have a DD. Can you put as many DDs under there as you want?
Yeah, I think you can.
Okay.
So there's a technique document for WCAG H40 using description lists, and it says, hold on. Of course, you know, I like just found it on the fly, so I'm trying to look at it. Yeah, so you can have multiple terms associated with a single description or vice versa. But it says that uses of description lists ensure that their terms and descriptions are semantically related even as the presentation format changes. They are easiest to use when the descriptions are ordered alphabetically. A common use of description lists is the glossary of terms. So yeah, I think you'd really want to be careful about just uniformly doing it. And even the example here is, it's like defining words, like they have nautical terms and they have not and a definition for that, port and a definition, mm-hmm. starboard and a definition.
I asked ChatGPT to give me a real world example of a description list, and it goes back to our food bloggers here. You know, it's so you have your DL, right, which it wraps the whole thing, and then it has a DT, It says bake, and then the DD says to cook food in the oven using dry heat. And then it goes back to a DT, saute. And then it says to cook food in a small amount of hot oil or butter. See, I'm getting Chris excited talking about cooking here, but as our former.
My head was going somewhere slightly less appropriate. I thought I was going to get multiple definitions for bake, just saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah, okay. No, so I really think it really seems like you should only use this for a glossary. That's what I think as I'm looking at some of the documentation. I do think it's interesting. I tried to find, like, what is a screen reader, like, what would VoiceOver in VDA actually say when it encounters it? Like, does it say that it's a description list? And I couldn't find that. So obviously that is something that I need to test. I think, Adrian Rossley also has an article about this we should link up. But yeah, so they're doing pretty much, it's encountering it in the same way it would a list, where it's providing what the count of the number is and all of that. But I don't know it's necessarily on different screen readers actually saying.
I think on VoiceOver,
it's a description.
I think it says something like, so when the screen reader hits it, it'll say like description list start. Does that sound right? It's kind of weird. It says after announcing the start of the list, the screen reader will typically read out the term element, the DT, and its corresponding description element, the DD, together in the order they appear in the markup.
Oh, so it's going to read it as one element or one sentence to a degree, rather than going down like you would through LIs.
Yeah, like, so the DT and the DD are going to get kind of combined into one description.
Yeah. Actually, Adrian's post is really good. I'll add that to our show notes also.
So the example that I read just a minute ago, right? So the screen reader would read it out like this. It would first announce a description list start, and then it would say bake, to cook food in an oven using dry heat, saute, to cook food in small amount of hot oil or butter. So it's just bake, period, to cook food in an oven using dry heat. So it's one sentence or one statement. It's actually two sentences, but like, it's like one statement. Yeah. Where an ordered list, right? You'd have to, I think you'd have to keep going through that, right? Like, it would read it in sequence. If it's nested. So this may be more beneficial for the screen reader. Like, it's read out more simply than like a nested list.
Yeah, there might be less noise.
Yeah. So very, very interesting.
And now you guys have the inside look, which is that we don't always know all this stuff, and sometimes we Google it too.
That's right. Or ChatGPT it, right?
I want to have a little tangent on ChatGPT. Wait, I can't even do it right now. GPT. Because I had my first experience in the admin bar on my Accessibility Weekly post this week. It was, oh man, hot topic. I had no idea, because it was about opening links in new tabs, whether or not you should do it, and then adding a warning.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people who really disagree that the best practice is to not do that, which we don't need to go down that rabbit hole right now. Maybe we will. But I got a comment back, because somebody had, you know, they said 99% of users prefer this. And I was like, I just kind of like smiled on my face. I was like, do you have like numbers on that 99% stat? Right. Well, he like went to ChatGPT and was like, I don't know what his prompt was, but something like, what articles prove that people want links to open in a new tab and that is the best practice? And it was really interesting. And I could tell that he did, because he pasted it back in, and it had like four or five different articles. And so this is a word of caution to people that are using ChatGPT to learn about accessibility. One of them was a link to WebAIM that totally 404'd. So I was like, I can't. And I tried Googling for it to see, oh, did it change between the time that ChatGPT had crawled WebAIM? Mm-hmm. I couldn't find that article. So I have no idea what that URL was that ChatGPT, I can't say it. Yeah. But the AI was looking for. Another one was Smashing Magazine. But if you went and read the Smashing Magazine article, it was the complete opposite of what AI was saying it said. So, and there were like two others like that. And then it incorrectly said that WCAG 2.4.3, which is about focus order, mm-hmm. what had anything to do with links opening new tabs, which it has nothing to do with links opening new tabs. It's that everything has to get order
right.
In focus that makes sense. and I've seen ChatGPT mess that up in the past, yeah. like that, the WCAG stuff. So I don't know, total rabbit hole, but warning yeah. to our don't trust the AI to give you good info about accessibility.
Right, right.
Or maybe anything. I don't know. And I think right. they even have a warning yeah. when you go there, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if they were using 4.0 or, you know, 3.5. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the prompt was, but, like, what you read out was, like, a totally, like, prove me right prompt, right? Which I don't think is an intelligent way to use the a tool like ChatGPT, right? Like, prove, you know, show somebody that I'm right, right? Here's my biased opinion, right? Like, yep. prove yeah. me right. It's like, I think we should be seeking out truth and fact for truth and fact, not for what we want the outcome to be, right?
Yeah. And, yep. Yeah, so 100%. Maybe be like, are there any articles on the web to provide evidence of X?
Yeah, yeah. How can I prove Amber Hines wrong?
Oh, great. Actually, I want to go post that in there and see what's that. I don't think it knows who I am, at least in the old version, because our company is too young. At one point in time, I asked it a question about our company, and it had a random name of someone I've never heard of that is the CEO of our company. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
We've spoken on this before, that it'll just hallucinate stuff even based on your prompt, right?
So I tried really hard then. I was like, that's not correct. It's not that person. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. You're right. It's this person. And it was also right. like someone I'd never heard of.
Yeah. So it's weird. I switched to 4.0, the model 4.0, and I asked, who is Amber Hines of Equalized Digital? And it says, as a knowledge base, it cuts off at September 2021. But I thought GPT-4 went beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, I also don't know how they got all the websites, because, I mean, our website existed in 2021, but I don't think, maybe it wasn't popular enough or something.
I mean, it says, you know, Amber Hines is the founder and CEO of Equalized Digital, a company dedicated to creating accessible websites and applications, etc.
Oh, well, cool.
But I prompted it with your name and company, so.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a band, a woman with a band named Amber Hines. We could go down the whole rabbit hole of what people's doppelgangers do. Yep. You probably have a lot, Steve Joneses, in the world.
Steve Jones, a guitar player for the Sex Pistols.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yep. Yeah.
Yours is more famous. Do you think he drinks Liquid Death?
Absolutely. I mean, he's in a band called the Sex Pistols, right?
Yeah. He probably drinks Liquid Death decanted into a monster can yeah. on stage.
For all we know, Liquid Death could be like his blood or something, right? Or other That's bodily scary. Fluids.
Who knows? Okay.
Well, with that, I think with that, it's probably time to wrap this up, right?
I think yep. you might be right.
After a couple of rabbit holes and some public service announcements around not allowing AI to be your sole resource of information in order to prove someone else wrong in an internet argument. Maybe don't do that.
Maybe, yeah.
But what you should do is revisit all the contents that you're adding to websites and think about what could be in a list.
Woo!
All right.
All right. See y'all later.
All right. Bye. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.